Good morning. This morning's first reading is from Paul's letter to the Roman Christians. Let no debt remain outstanding except the continuing debt to love one another, for whoever loves others has fulfilled the law. The commandments: you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and whatever other command there may be, are summed up in one command: love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. And do this, understanding the present time. The hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here, so let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us behave decently, as in the daytime, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and debauchery, not in dissension and jealousy. Rather, clothe yourself with the Lord Jesus Christ, and do not think about how to gratify the desires of the flesh. Our second reading from the Gospel of Matthew. If your brother or sister sins, go and point out their fault, just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen, even to the church, treat them as you would a pagan or a tax collector. Truly, I tell you, whatever you bid on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you lose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Again, truly, I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything they ask for, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three gather in my name, there am I with them. This is the word of the Lord.
So it goes without saying that cultural and geographical differences are just part of our human life, that where you live often informs much about who and how you are. I grew up on the east side of good old scrappy Buffalo, New York. I went to high school in the late 60s and early 70s, where our high school was pretty well integrated black and white. The way in which my black friends spoke when they were with their same race group was very different from how my black friends spoke when we were doing student council activities or working on the school newspaper. But there had been race riots, like in so many places, in the late 60s in Buffalo. There was violent anti-Vietnam student riots at the University of Buffalo in 1970, and my high school was just 2 miles from the then downtown campus of UB. So activism and civil rights and anti-government fervor around the war and authoritarianism, those were kind of the air that we breathed, right, in the late 60s and early 70s. When a black friend at school one day said, "Hell no," to a teacher, I was this little compliant white girl having grown up kind of in a pretty typical white family. And I remember sitting there going, wow, is that maybe possibly an okay way to respond to a teacher who makes an unreasonable request? I mean, it was the first time it had crossed my mind that there could be, you could speak back to an authority figure. And of course, I've learned lots of lessons since then, but I remember as clear as a bell that none of us white kids would have ever said that. But there was a cultural response that grew out of some empowerment stuff going on that happened in that classroom that day. When I lived in Berkeley while I was in seminary, suddenly we were talking about Pacific Rim issues. And I remember being a little puzzled, like I'd grown up on, you know, Lake Erie, not the Pacific Ocean. And so looking across Pacific Rim issues, I'd learned about how historically the Chinese and the Japanese had been treated in America, but this was my first kind of brush with prioritizing issues of that part of the world. It was something new for me. When I lived in Alaska as the pastor of a little church up there, oh my goodness, I thought that coming out of Buffalo and having a knowledge about the Seneca Nation and the Longhouse and the Iroquois, that I knew something about Native history in America. And suddenly, Eskimos, well, they were really Yupik or Inuit. And then there was Shimsham and Aleut and Tlingit and all these tribes that I had never heard of. And then what I knew in the lower 48 is that Native American peoples were organized in tribes, and up there, there was this enormous Alaskan Native regional corporation breakdown of how tribes were organized. Oh my goodness, I knew nothing. Then in 2010, I moved to New England, to Vermont. And in one way in particular, I may have had the hardest adjustment of my life in terms of cultural differences, because in all those other places, there were varieties of ways of communicating, especially on hard issues, and all of it was influenced by culture and ethnicity and history. And so what I had learned in each of those other places was to take a step back, to listen long enough and hard enough, especially when we were having hard conversations about controversial topics, because I was the new person and I didn't know anything. I did not have a shared history with those folks. I might have had great ideas about how we might deal with the challenges in front of us, but I didn't have any credibility, right? I hadn't paid my dues. I hadn't listened long enough. Well, silly me, when I came to New England, I presumed that I had arrived in a place where, since everyone looked like me and spoke like me, we all must be the same. So imagine my surprise when 4 days after a contentious church council meeting, I had a visit from the head deacon taking me to task for something that I had said at that meeting. This was 4 days later, for heaven's sake. What took them so long? I was just flummoxed. Why hadn't someone said something right there at the table, right? Why had there been those parking lot and kitchen table conversations about this thing? Why hadn't they confronted me on the spot? Well, it took me some time to understand that that proverbial New England pleasant exterior did not mean that we had heard or understood each other clearly in the midst of something that was hard. I had to learn a new way of communicating, which was such an important lesson about just recognizing that it's what you see is not always what you get. Well, that's a long way to get at today's gospel and early epistle teaching. At one point, what Jesus is saying in Matthew about, you know, if you've got an argument with someone, go and talk to them, and if you can't resolve it, go and get a couple more people. At one level, that seems like it's all about how to get along, right? Well, Matthew wrote his gospel, I don't know, 85 or so of the first century, 85 of the Common Era, which was already at least 40 years and probably longer after Jesus had died and been resurrected. And so the earliest churches were just beginning to come together to say, oh my goodness, these stories that we have received about this new teacher, This is really life-changing teaching, and we want to gather and learn and share and grow in this new knowledge. So at one level, what Jesus is saying is about how do we hold together when something's new or hard or the way forward is not clear. But if you dig under, as always in the gospel, if you dig under, there's a way bigger story being told about human beings living with one another toward really world-changing kinds of harmony. In chapter 18 in Matthew, Jesus is quoted as saying these really hard words. If your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and throw it away, because it's better for you to enter life with one eye than to be there with two eyes and be thrown into the pit of hell. Probably that's not a literal teaching that Jesus intended, as hardly any of his words. So there, he seemed to be saying we should cut off any part of our body that causes us to sin, to not be in harmony with one another. I think what Jesus is saying is look really carefully in the mirror. Know yourself, sisters and brothers. Recognize that none of us is perfect. I don't know everything. And when there is disagreement or conflict, here's the deal, Jesus is saying. Really, how important is this? Can I let go? Do I really need to have my say about this? Or is it not so important? And then a second thing, what did that other person hear when I said those words, not thinking that perhaps cultural context was different? What did that person hear? What's the perspective that might be different from mine? And then finally, I think that Jesus is saying, what does God hear, Karen, when you open your mouth and speak sometimes impulsively? Purpose, always in our interactions with one another, particularly when we've got some gruffness happening, the purpose of our interactions always has to be to resolving the conflict. But in this short reading from the Gospel of Matthew this morning, there's a line that really is so perfect. Jesus says, if you can't find a way to be at peace with one another, well then treat that person like, as you read, a pagan, a Gentile, or a tax collector. And we're supposed to kind of, at one level, go, huh, I guess we can just leave them behind. Except if you read the whole of the Gospels, you know how Jesus treated Gentiles and tax collectors, right? Jesus went out of his way to be sure that those who we would walk away from are exactly the ones we need to turn and invite in. Radical, inclusive love is the bottom line over and over with Jesus. The health and welfare of the whole community always trumps my satisfaction, my getting what I deserve. In our fractured nation today, which shows up even in those now proverbial Uncle Joe's coming for Thanksgiving dinner, and how are we going to have conversations without fighting around the turkey, right? I mean, our nation is so fractured around our opinions. This notion of holding the community, whether that community is family or church or town or state or nation or, I dare say, world, holding that together in love, Jesus' teaching this morning is so powerful. Our whole book, from beginning to end, mandates that we show special care for the lost, the last, the least, and the littlest, right? And so that means, of course, that the found and the first and the most and the maximum have to be willing to step back in favor of the ones who are hurting the most. I think a classic example in our culture right now, when African American sisters and brothers proclaim Black Lives Matter, we majority folks, we can't murmur, well, our lives matter too. That's not about us, and it's not about skin color, because this is about understanding the system of oppression that has worked to make the lived experience of our Black sisters and brothers less than, and even worse than less than. This idea of stepping back to be sure that those who have been most excluded are included, I think that's just gospel. I think that's Jesus. When I come home from a really emotionally charged day at work, and I practically scream, "Why can't you men stop hurting women?" I say to Gary, "You need to stop saying, 'I'm not like those men,' like I would have married you if you were." What he really needs to say is, "Man, we are all in this together, and one day domestic violence will end." It's the idea of hearing below and beyond the words. Friends at Old South, we are engaged in nothing less right now than building a new world order. From Palestinians to the Rohingya that we've read about this week, to Syrians, to Black and Native Americans, we are about building a new world order that looks like the welcome table of our God. And Paul, good old Paul, in his letter to the new church in Rome, in the late first century, he says, "Owe no one anything except to choose love." Let us lay aside the works of darkness and clothe ourselves in the armor of light, which is love. Whew. We have a lot of hard work ahead of us. It's worthy work. It's the only work that matters. And guess what? We can do this work because we aren't alone in doing it. "For where two or more are gathered in my name," Jesus said, "my real presence, I am there in the midst of you." Any work that we do toward building this new way of love is empowered by the presence of Jesus. And note this, Jesus didn't say, "Whenever two or more are gathered and in agreement," Jesus said simply, "When you gather in my name, I am there with you." So love, the real presence of Christ. Here we are, more than two, gathered in his name, the risen Christ in our midst. We are unstoppable. Thanks.